and welcome. You're listening to Art on the Air, WVLP 103.1 FM. It's our weekly program covering arts and arts events in Valparaiso and throughout Northwest Indiana. I'm Larry Breckner, alongside here with Esther Golden of The Nest in Michigan City. We're your hosts for Art on the Air. Our 2018 underwriters for Art on the Air are from Valpo University Brouwer Museum and our landlord, Walt Breitinger. And if you'd like to find out more about leasing space in our historic building, great place for artists to come, call 219-462-5821. That's 219-462-5821. We'd like to thank them for their generous support. And also thanks to Greg Kovach. He's WVLP's station manager and the engineer on our show. Hey, if you're interested in being a guest or sending us information about your arts events or related exhibit space or any coming on as an artist, please email us at artontheairwvlp@gmail.com. That's artontheairwvlp@gmail.com. And this program will be rebroadcast on Monday at 5 p.m. And as always, we're streaming live at WVLP.org. And before we get to the arts calendar, we'd like to remind people about our underwriting. You know, WVLP listeners, this station is a community station and is supported by you. We are looking for your support of your community radio station. We are supported by individual listeners and different underwriters. And while our campaign did end on November 21st, we still have the Day of Giving coming up on November 27th, and we would be happy to accept underwriting anytime. Esther and I would especially like that you would become underwriters of this program, Art on the Air. So if you're interested in doing that, you can contact us at WVLP.org. That's wv.org/support. We have many different levels that may match, like a basic level where you'll $300 a year, you get two acknowledgments during an hour of show plus acknowledgments throughout the year, all the way up to major amounts. You can find those amounts at on our website, and we'd be happy to have you be an underwriter. Don't give till it hurts. Give till it feels good. Now we're going to go to the there's a labism, but anyway. Now we're going to go to the arts calendar before we get to our guests. And and the other thing I'd like to remind you, since today is Black Friday, maybe we should shop local and shop small. We have a whole bunch of artists out there who have great stuff. I know, being a photographer, I actually put a thing on my website. But, you know, maybe it's time to not be going to a big box store and buying a whole bunch of stuff like TVs and all that. Why don't you get something that's art? There's something in your home that comes from someone local. Whatever it is, maybe shop local and shop small. Now we have, moving on to Porter County, Valparaiso University Center for Arts, the Brouwer Museum. And through December 9th, the ongoing exhibit, the photography of David Robert Austin, we ended up in Australia. Lives honored and dreams imagined on a base true story. Asher Yates at Strimbu Gallery on the second floor. There'll be an artist reception on we already had the artist, but this is part of a whole veterans exhibit at the Bradford University campus. Asher Yates has his entire exhibit at the Strimbu Gallery. Krista Steinke is still in there with Good Luck with the Sun and other works. The Ellen Fermi Gallery, the Dunes photographer James Larson exhibit continues. That's at US 12 in Beverly Shores. The Village Gallery at Pines Village through December 6th, Valpo University Junior Exhibition. There's 12 art major students whose works will be on display beginning December 9th through January 17th. And also we have the oils of Lori Shimmer Carpenter there on display at Pines Village. Chesterton Arts Center continues with the Area Art Association exhibit, Regional Expressions. The gallery hours are Monday through Friday, 11 to 4, and Saturday, 11 to 2. And that's in Chesterton, that cute little building with the red door. Uptown and Roots, November, the artist Liz is at the Valpo Uptown Cafe. And that exhibit will end in the end of this month. So you can stop in there and see some great people. Art Barn has a holiday open house on Saturday, November 24th. And it's from 10 to 4 p.m. You can meet the new executive director, Amy Davis Narvachuska. She's from Lubesnik, leaving there to become the new executive director. And you can meet the instructors and find out the unique gifts that they have there. Now let's move to LaPorte County.
LaPorte County, the Lubesnik Center for the Arts. Waiting for a Sign explores the use of signage, text, and iconographic visual images and symbols in the work of 8 contemporary artists in the Heinemann, Brinca Cross, and Susan Block Galleries through January 12th. Southern Shore Art Association on exhibit now for the months of November and December, the holiday exhibit, The Gift of Art. The gallery is located at 724 Franklin Street. For more information, visit the SSAA website at southernshoreartassociation.com or visit the SSAA Facebook page. SFC Gallery at 607 Franklin Street is exhibiting the watercolors of Kathy Lose Rathbun through the end of the month. On Friday, December 7th, from 5 to 8 p.m., SFC is hosting the Dig the Dunes calendar release party and reception. They will exhibit the winning photographer's work through December. Our very own co-host of Art on the Air, Larry Breckner, will have his image in the July page of the calendar called, his image is Washington Park, Dune Dusk. So go visit. Will you be there to sign?
Oh, I definitely be there. Oh, sure. I'll sign the calendar and everything. So great photography in that exhibit, by the way. Not just because I have a piece in it, but there's some wonderful things.
Well, Dig the Dunes is fabulous. At the Blink Contemporary Art at 1709 Franklin Street, they're exhibiting the new work, Paintings and Drawings and Sculptures by artists Rick Lang and Suzanne Cohen Lang. The Rising Phoenix Gallery at 2803 South Franklin Street has a ceramic exhibit this month called Playing in the Mud. The Nest, located at 803 Franklin Street, we're exhibiting the abstract paintings of David Kreiner and the geometric paintings and sculpture of Margie Kreiner through December 16th. Every Wednesday, Meditation Circle with Nikki Nost. Every second Thursday of the month, Drum Circle with John Wenig. And every Friday, Oil Painting with Michelle Weiser. On December 2nd, it's the second annual Movable Art Feast holiday pop-up. And this year, we have three galleries that will transform into a mini art festival, starting at 10:30 at the Rising Phoenix Gallery, then at 11 a.m. at the Blink Contemporary Art, and finally in the Nest at 11:30. Each gallery will remain open throughout the day, but the times will vary at each gallery. The Nest, will be open until 5 or 6 p.m. We have ongoing piano lessons with Melissa Krause by appointment, and details can be found on our Facebook page, The Nest, Michigan City. Let's move on to the next county.
Okay, we're going to Lake County, so get those three county regions. Well, at the South Shore Arts, we have Indie Windy, a love story. It's running through January 29th. We'll feature artists from Indiana, Chicago, who execute large public works to create new environments in an aging and urban and manufacturing area. They document their experiences, creating work in both their private studios. It's curated by Ish Mohammed, a self-taught artist from Indiana, who has a studio at Zara B Art in Chicago, that's located in the Bridgeport community. So you can see that in the Atrium Gallery, where they continue through November 25th, so almost ready to close. Ori Schaefer, The Nature of the Abstract. At the Crown Point branch, they have Mike Barrett Kowalski, Wildscapes, and that's continuing through the first of the year through January 5th. 119th Street Artists, the Oliver Brown Juried Exhibit. Opens November 26th through January 16th at the Cornerstone Gallery, and they'll have an opening reception on November 30th, 6 to 9 p.m., and that's located at 119th Street and New York Avenue. It's actually in the back of the Centier Bank there. They're kind enough to have a studio space, so it's available Monday through Friday, 9 to 5, and Saturdays from 9 to 12. And you can go see details at 119th Street Artists, either on their Facebook or webpage. Studio 659 are doing their children's under 18 art exhibit. And that you can find out information about that at artcouncil659@gmail.com, or look at Studio 659 on the web and you can get information there. Indiana Ballet Theater will be forming the 21st annual performance of The Nutcracker, and they'll be doing this at various venues throughout Northwest Indiana. Starting November 30th through December 2nd, they'll be at Crown Point High School, December 8th and 9th at Valparaiso High School, and December 13th through the 15th at Indiana University Northwest. Details are at ibtnw.org, or you can look them up on Facebook at Indiana Ballet Theater. Finally, the Northwest Indiana Symphony has their ever-famous Holiday Pops concert. And of course, this is the first year that they are no longer in the Star Plaza, so they'll be doing it at various locations. They'll be having Jesse Donner, the tenor, Munster High School Chorale, Northwest Indiana Suzuki School, and of course the Symphony Chorus. And on Thursday, December 13th, they'll be at Monbeck Auditorium at Highland High School, and Friday, December 14th, they'll be at the auditorium at Valparaiso High School. You can get information from Northwest Indiana Symphony, I think it's nico.org if you want, or do again a Facebook search. So that's what's going on in the region. We hope you get out to see some of the wonderful things that are happening. Well, I'm very excited about our guests today.
Super excited.
We're going to have a real mashup here of different art styles. We have Kai Konstantinov, who is an oil painter and author, and we'll talk about her background, so I'm not going to take away things. And the other one is John Lenthing, but people don't know him like that. They know him as Broadbent Lenthing. And again, we have two great artists. His art tends to be now much more abstract, and hers are really oil and kind of realistic. So we'd like to welcome them to the show.
Thank you for inviting us.
Okay.
Thank you.
Well, why don't we start with you, Kai, and talk about how did you get to, where did you come from and how did you get here?
Okay, I was born in Trail Creek, lived there until I was 18, went to, you know, to the public schools, and because I had traveled extensively with my family, I just determined there were more interesting places to be, I'm sorry to say that, and made a very circuitous journey back here, 35 years later, I came back, and that was about 5 years ago.
And where are you at right now, located right now?
In the Uptown Arts District. My son and I have a studio. And I live in Elston Grove, an historic district, just down the street from there.
Very good. Well, Robert, tell us about you. Have an interesting story coming to us as an immigrant long time ago.
Yeah, long time ago. we left the Netherlands. I was born in Setoven Bos, which is actually a kind of a mysterious city or town. And it's the birthplace of Hieronymus Bosch back in those early 1500 or something like that. And it feels funny, but sometimes I feel like, and I don't believe in this stuff, but sometimes I feel like Bosch is with me. Because some people have actually said, hey, I think I feel a Bosch in this particular piece, but I don't know where it comes from because I never have any preconceived ideas of anything like that. But we ended up in Winnipeg, Canada in 1953. My dad was he's trying to get a job at Ford Motor Company as a tool and die maker. It didn't happen until 1956 when they called him in outside of Chicago, the South Side Stamping Plant. And that's when we ended up on the South Side of Chicago. And that's how I ended up here, so that's that. But I have a studio, too, at the same, on Franklin, in Michigan City, 617 Franklin. And I have various hours, so it's probably best to call me first, but I don't always answer my phone either. So, but if can I give out the number?
But sure. I mean, I was going to ask you to do that, and we'll do that several times.
312-203-9728.
Give that one more time.
312-203-9728.
So you're quite well known these days for your early morning flash drawings, like at 3:48 a.m.
Right.
Yeah.
Is that after being up all night and then
I don't sleep not well, and especially now after I had surgery, I don't sleep as well. But I get up, and then I go into the kitchen, make a brew of fresh product coffee, and then I go back into the home studio, and it's a mess in there, but I bet over 3,000 flash drawings that are unmounted right now, and it's a real process. The only thing is, because I'd rather be doing artwork instead of doing the other, it's a real process to mount these things, and I use Twin Rocker handmade paper from Brookston, Indiana. And the price has skyrocketed because I have the heavy grade that I mount these lighter grade pieces on. And it's, I'd rather be doing painting and stuff. So those flash drawings in the morning are nothing because I really enjoy it. I have the cup. Sometimes I got to watch where I put my cup. I just take whatever brush and I got all kind of pots of paint. I just go. And sometimes I do this technique with pastel. And I wipe the pastel across there. And I found I created a technique where I use this light oil. It's like it used to be known as a typewriter oil or dental oil that they use for before when they used to still put the tools in the autoclave. They used to coat them with a light coating of oil before they put them in the autoclave. And that's the stuff I use with, I put a small amount if I use pastel, and I go over it with a small brush and do all kind of gestural things. I let that kind of dry, and then I'll go in with the more acrylic paint, and sometimes oil too. I just mix them all up, and it's just automatic. I mean, I can't explain how it happens. It's just in me. I mean, and then some, you know, personally, I don't like some as well as others, but I post every one of them that I do, because there are people that like the ones that I don't like. And it kind of makes sense, being in a non-really metropolitan art area like New York or something, because everybody has their own taste out here more so than, you know. I'd be probably really getting bashed if I was in New York City and they'd say, God dang, yeah. Well,
you're all over the place.
All over the place, man. Damn.
Well, you need to mark your cups. One is coffee and one is for the brush.
Yeah,
put
I
a label
wanna,
on that.
Yeah, exactly. I don't want to do like the Stooges did then.
That's right.
Sounds like it's time for an intern.
Hey, Kai.
Oh, Beck, yeah.
Let's go explore some of your background, like education, how, you know, art education and, you know, ongoing type of things like that. And the type of art you're doing.
Right, right. Well, I was, you know, I wasn't very happy with the culture of high school and that sort of thing, and I just was very adventuresome. So I was sort of a gypsy for 5 years, and I traveled all over the United States and then went abroad, lived on the Isle of Wight for a time. You know, just so it took me a while. I mean, I was all over the place. I wound up in Manhattan, lived for a while in Stuyvesant Town by Alphabet Land before it became an arts area. And then I wound up going with my boyfriend to Alaska and working on the pipeline, because that was all there was to do there, because I sort of bailed at that point. I thought, I want to stay here, and I wound up on the pipeline. And then I moved to Seattle and went to an art school. And then I was in school for 8 years after that, various places.
And you ended up eventually with a Master of Fine Arts.
Yes, from the University of Massachusetts
okay. In
Amherst.
Very good.
Yes.
And you're also an author.
Yes, I am.
And that's a novella you're working on, I believe?
I have a novella that's finished. And I have right here in my composition book, After the Gypsies Were Gone, which is going to be a screenplay. So I've just embarked upon this.
Any real life? Any real life situations in the screenplay?
Well, anything that you do is somewhat autobiographical, isn't it?
Sometimes more so than
yeah,
not, though.
Right. Yeah. I would say so.
And we Broadbent talked a little bit about his art. Describe a little bit what your art is like. It's because that's one thing, is you have kind of contrasting art styles, at least
right.
Now in your present life.
Right. Well, it's realistic. It uses, you know, very old techniques, which has sort of fallen out of fashion. A lot of glazing, imprimatura, rather than a la prima, which means that the canvas is toned rather than just left white. A lot of drawing, planning, successive stages which are allowed to dry before you go over and rework them. So, you know, it takes me about a month to do a 24 by 30 painting because of the wait times and pulling away and assessing it and then going in again and again and again. So it's just it's a more labored process.
So do you have more than one piece going at a time, or do you use the drying time for your writing?
Well, at present, you know, I'm doing plein air, too. I have a show that I'll mount at the Palette and Chisel in Chicago in a couple days. And so I have the plein air paintings I'm working on concurrently, with the larger oil paintings, because those are faster and smaller.
One of the faults probably of radio is that we can't show you their work. You know, I'm familiar with both of them, knowing these are great artists. But, yeah, that's probably one of these times aspects we'll have to stream live to show you some of the artwork. But you can see it. They both have Facebook pages and websites, so you can visualize that. So,
do you want to tell them what the website is?
You can go ahead and tell them.
Okay, mine is kaijkonstantinov.com. That's KEIJCONSTANTINOV.com.
Very good. And Robin, I know you have a both yeah. Facebook page. And, well, we know about your Facebook page because I see that every morning.
I have a Brabant United on Facebook and just Brabant Linting.
Okay.
And I devote Brabant United solely to just artwork, previous and the past work. I'm just still trying to build it up because I'm no internet genius by any means. But they also built a website for me, and it's through Wix. It's https / two slashes Brabant projects at
probably Wix, should be a dot, right?
Yeah, dot Wix site, and
do you have a link on your Facebook page to that? I think you have
a
link.
Yeah, I do have a link.
Because
okay.
I know that's where I pulled your biography
real
from.
Small. Somebody printed these cards and I can't read it.
Well, we need to get you the Braille edition. So, oh my gosh, you are right. So it's Brabant. That's Brabant projects, all one word. Wixsite.com, and of course then you want to go directly to gallery, you can slash gallery, but if you get that far along, you'll get along, you can see the gallery bio and everything like that. So
I just wanted to interject something. When I was doing the research for my first book, because my work tends to be neo-medieval, I kept encountering the name Brabant, and it was a very famous noble family. Yeah. In the Netherlands,
yeah.
And so, you know, you might come by that Hieronymus Bosch thing naturally, you know. I mean, and, I don't know, you know.
Yeah, and the other thing, I did a little research on it myself, but I was born in what they have a Brabant province.
Right.
North and south. And I was born in the one closer to the Belgian border, mm-hmm. because mm-hmm. Setovenbosch was closer to the Belgian border. Right. And just one day, maybe 10, 12 years ago, I said, dang, I had just come back from New York, I spent a whole week there, and they kind of just ignored me. They said, oh, yes, and me, I don't want to call myself an idiot, but they said, where are you from? They said, Indiana, and immediately they thought I was a corn farmer or something. Like that. So they said, we'll file this. I said, yeah, okay, please do. You know, now if I would have told them, it might have been a whole different story. I said I was born in Setovenbosch, which I was, in the Netherlands. They would have probably said, I think.
Oh, a little interesting here.
Right.
Interesting.
No man is a prophet in his own land.
Exactly.
Yeah, that's what they say.
So, you know, but yeah, Brabant has got a real noble thing in the.
Oh, yeah.
So when did you take on that moniker?
Oh, about, I want to say, almost 10 years ago.
Okay. Because, I mean, I think
I came back from New York, and I said, I'm getting nowhere. You know, John Lenting, and where are you from, Indiana? Oh, corn farmer.
It was the longest time before I knew your first name was John.
And so, And so, you know, I talked to my brother about it. He said, yeah, why not? Just use Brabant. And all of a sudden, the galleries, they were not interested in me anymore, started getting interest. Oh, you got a show here, and, you know, and even in Chicago, and I said, dang, look at.
Well, you do have that story about the New York gallery not wanting to let you into the show, and then you called in again with.
Oh, no, that was Richard Gray, actually. That was back in the day. There were Lucas Samaras was showing there. He did stuff with Polaroid, configuration.
Manipulation of the surface, yeah.
And I wanted to get in there, but it was by invitation only, the opening night. And I was in Chicago because I worked in Chicago, and I said, dang, what I can do? So I called him up. I called up the gallery, and I disguised my voice. I said, Hey, listen here, I'm flying in from Germany, and I am a really big fan of Lucas Samaras, but I had no idea this was going on. So is it possible that I can attend? Yeah, they said, yeah, come on. But first, I left that out. First, I went right there, and I was buzzing the door, and I had my jeans on and everything. And they wouldn't let me in. I was buzzing, you know.
So you thought you just got off your tractor?
Yeah. On my tractor, or I was some homeless guy maybe looking to get something. So I went back to the car. I had a change of clothes. I had a suit coat and everything else. And so that's when I made the call, you know. Not cell phone, just regular, you know, telephone, phone booth. And when I came and I announced myself, I was all, yeah, I'm, you know, so-and-so, and to let me in. So I had a nice evening that night with Lucas Samaras and all the people from Richard Gray Gallery. So it was quite nice.
Very nice.
So we'll go back to Kai. Tell us about some of your subjects. I know you kind of call them neoclassical?
Neo-medieval.
Neo-medieval.
Yeah. Well, you know, I started writing shortly after we sold our business in Ann Arbor and moved back here. I started the novella, and it was based on the life, I fictionalized the life of a 12th century mystic, a woman who was quite mad, you know, an autotheist who was quite mad. And there wasn't a lot known about her, so I fictionalized it. I gave her, you know, a courtesan, a Venetian courtesan mother, and Marco Polo as a father. And she was indeed a colleague and a lover of Dante Alighieri. And in Purgatorio, there's Matilda is modeled after her. And so I had this, you know, these characters who were living in my head that were, you know, from the 12th century. And so I just, you know, my work has looked that way, actually, for some time. But then I had physical characters I could depict in that sort of thing. And I, so that's what it stemmed from. The writing of that book, and I have about 12 oil paintings that I did in about 3 years that relate directly to the book, and then I did some storyboards with egg tempera and gilding on paper, which are also related to the book, which are in a somewhat different, you know, sort of more of a graphic novel kind of look to them, but it's all, you know, part of that same body of work, you know, which and when the book is published, it will be an adult fairy tale with pictures.
Kai, didn't you also 3D them as puppets as well? Is that?
I did determine that I would make several large puppets. I made Dante Alighieri, who's about 4 feet tall, and I never, you know, I mean, things kept preempting the making of the other puppets, but I intended to have three of them. And to use them, actually somebody asked me, I wanted to do a love scene with the puppets in Venice with three of these characters, and Dan Schaff from Sudden Productions was supposed to be doing a video of this. I thought, that's a great promo piece, you know. And so that still is, you know, sort of in the background, yes, on the back burner. So it's just a matter of making the puppets, and then that would be a great trailer, too, for the book. So.
Fantastic. You're listening, by the way, to Art on the Air on WVLP 103.1 FM. And again, we're streaming online at WVLP.org. Our guests today are Brabant Lenting and Kai Kostofanov. I'll get that right, one of these things.
Konstantinov.
There we go. And they're our guests today, bringing what their artwork is. And they're both have studios in Michigan City and have an online presence. So we're doing that. One thing I always talk to Brabant about is his service outside of art. You were in Vietnam.
Yes, I was fortunate. I did two tours of Vietnam on a great big battleship, World War II era, USS New Jersey, BB-62.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And the funny thing is, when I got out of Annapolis, Maryland, I wasn't a midshipman. I was helping the midshipmen on sailboats in Chesapeake Bay. But I got orders after that land station to the Mediterranean, to a flagship with the admiral that was really well known. And then a week later, they said, sorry, kid, you're going to Vietnam.
Oh, no. Surprise!
You go into the Philadelphia Naval Shipyards to recommission the USS New Jersey. So that's what we did, and after we got it all going, we stopped at Norfolk, and then we went through the Panama Canal.
Wow.
And that was, I don't know if that was a first, but it was a real tight squeeze. I mean, all these deckhands had big fire hoses, and they were on both sides, you know, just for the friction. Because this ship had 18-inch armor steel plating. And so we landed up in San Diego and then Long Beach, and then on to Vietnam, off about 6 miles off the coast. I was lucky because we were laying on a deck one day, a bunch of us, and the captain says, "General quarters, they're trying to hit us with something." And they were like shore batteries, and they were missing quite a bit. They were just going like, you could hear them sploosh. So we all went. The captain ordered a broadside that way, you know, with those big 16-inch guns and stuff. And after about less than 5 minutes, it was all
over.
So, you know, but that's primarily what we did. And the only other action that I had was that a Russian MiG, which the North Vietnamese had access to, came at us. But we were also retrofitted with surface-to-air missiles. The missile got it. But I was an engineman, and my duties were both lifeboats, the motor launch. When we were in docked, I was doing the captain's gig. And I also drove the captain's car with him, the black little Navy car. And so it was actually a good duty, you know, but I just... I was fortunate, but I did two tours back and forth, and we spent a little time off North Korea too on the way back. We had to turn back on our way to San Diego because they had shot down some jets or something. I don't even remember, but we had to take up station by North Korea.
So did you do art while you were on the ship? What kind of art did you do? Was it what materials did you have available?
When I enlisted, I said, "What do you do, kid?" And I said, "Well, I like to do graphic design and stuff like that." And, "Oh, no, the civilians are taking care of that. This is wartime," he said. "You have to choose something else." I said, "Well, I like to work our cars." "Nah, not much gasoline, diesel," I said. Yeah, well, okay, diesel, you know. So I ended up working on diesel engines and stuff. And then they knew my art background, so one time they set me in a room all the way down below, all by myself. And we had gotten these Davy Jones certificates. They were all calligraphic, you know. Mm-hmm. And they said, "Hey, you're the artist, huh? Let's put you in this room and you can do script, you know, sign, put these guys' names on this big certificate of David Jones."
You were a calligrapher as well?
Yeah. Hmm. And so I did those for over 2 weeks. They had me shut in there, you know, doing all these hand by hand. And then they knew all about me. So when Bob Hope came on with Ann Margaret offshore, they said, "Hey, you got to make a banner for the front of the turrets, you know, where the stage was set up." So I did that. And then also doubled as an escort when they arrived by helicopter. I escorted Bob Hope and Ann Margaret and her husband at that time. So I took them to the front, the forward section of the ship where the stage was at. And Bob Hope was a nice guy, and so was Ann Margaret, but Ann Margaret's husband at the time, not so much. He didn't like the sailors whistling at his wife. So.
And that's what it's about, right?
And that's what it's about.
So, but what about personally? Did you document your time there personally with drawings or a diary or because I've met a lot of Vietnam vets who even when they were out would just have their pencil and paper and do drawings, right. You know, and would have to. It was really hard to keep them dry. I remember.
I would do more cartoons than anything else. Mm-hmm. I got in trouble. I didn't really get in trouble in the Navy, but more so in the afterwards in the steel mill. I used to draw the plant superintendent, and I'd call him a genius, and I put him in real stupid situations, and he didn't appreciate
it. There's that Bosch coming out again, right there, that imp.
I put it on the on the bulletin boards in the machine shop and all over the steel mill, and he caught wind of it. I don't appreciate that stuff. He said, can you just control yourself and that? I said, okay, I won't do it no more. But I did it in the Navy, too. A lot of cartoons of fellow shipmates and stuff. But
caricatures?
Caricatures, yeah.
Well, I know I've said it to you personally before, but I'll say it on air. Thank you for your service. Vietnam veterans never got their parade, when they came home. And it always breaks my heart, because I was just after the Vietnam era. But, anyone that served in that war.
I enlisted. Yeah. Because I got orders for Fort Knox, Kentucky, in infantry. And I said, oh, no, not me. So I went to see my friendly Navy recruiter, and he was glad to sign me up for 4 years. So that's how I ended up. But I saw, I'm glad of it because I saw a lot of the world. I saw Hong Kong, different ports, Tokyo, even as far as Australia and stuff. So it was a good learning experience for me.
Yeah.
And I got to serve somewhat my country, So.
Well, we appreciate it. Kai, I see in your bio that you were involved with a classical music producer.
Right. My son's father, my former husband, was a Bulgarian refugee, actually, from communist Bulgaria. And he was in a processing camp in Rome initially. He escaped with the captain of the Bulgarian army, which is my son's uncle Misho, and they walked across Yugoslavia and into Italy and were in a camp. And then his cousin was living in Miami, and so he had a place to to come to the States. So he lived in Miami for a time, and then moved to New York. And got a job as a digital engineer in a small company, and moved across the street from me. So then he moved into my building, and we met shortly thereafter. But he was like the golden boy of Sony Classical. He was one of the first digital engineers, and did a lot of important recordings. We used to go to the Italian Riviera for like the Rossini Festival and things like that when Yanko was little. He was at La Scala a lot. He conducted the Metropolitan Orchestra when Levine wasn't there, at a certain point. He had a whole background, as a musician as well. So, yeah.
Okay, and you didn't you purchase a church to convert to a theater or something like that?
Right, yeah. At a certain point, until 2013, we bought a lovely historic church complex that's right on campus in Ann Arbor, and it was my idea to have a bed and breakfast, which would be sort of the machine that ran a cultural center, because it had been the Unitarian Universalist Church, and so it had a lovely prairie-style church, there was a big castle-stone house, there was a parsonage for the lodging, and there was a carriage house on three city lots. And so the cultural center, I could only take it so far because Yanko was little. I was running the bed and breakfast. I had orchestrated everything. I had designed everything. We had Argentinian tango. We had opera. We had various concerts, weddings, bar mitzvahs, and things like that. But I could never quite lift it as an art center. It was always eclipsed by the university because we were right on campus.
Very good.
But yeah, we did that for 16 years. My son was raised there.
Very good.
Yeah.
Well, you know, I think Esther will probably explore this more, but I remember sitting in on Area Art Association where you talked about your painting technique using egg tempera and gilding. So maybe we want to talk about that, and that's more your expertise than mine.
Well, Kai did an amazing presentation at In the Nest on those two subjects,
thank you.
We still are hearing how fabulous people, people enjoyed that so much, Kai. Thank you. Yeah. It was...
Well, I did that at Lubesnik, too, not very long ago. And it's just, it's amazing because prior to the 15th century, everybody painted an egg tempera. You know, everybody did. So, some of the sarcophagi and some of the, you know, if it wasn't fresco, if it wasn't encaustic, it was egg tempera. And that stuff is still fresh as can be. The protein in the egg yolk just is incredibly impermeable to the elements. So, it's something that's totally green. It's something that's practically free. You know, you can use, you know, a carton of eggs would last you 5 months doing eggs. So there's no cost involved either. So it's just, it's amazing that it's not really conveyed in the schools or anything. You wouldn't find it ordinarily in a classroom situation in any university, unless somebody was willing to work with you, I suppose, one-on-one. So, you know, I had to look at Cennino Cennini's, you know, treatise on, you know, artworks, and I had to go way, way, way back to find information about it, and a certain amount of online searching, mm-hmm. and...
Everything seems to ebb and flow, though, just like realism. Like it comes in
right.
and out, just like the tide.
It's a pendulum.
Sometimes it's
sure. But
maybe for our listeners, just very briefly, tell us about how egg tempera is used in painting, because there may be some people that, again, even artists that are unfamiliar with that. I know I learned a lot when I was at that session you did at Lubesnik for Area Artists.
Well, so first of all, it's a rather, if you were to apply it somewhat heavily, you wouldn't want to do it on canvas. It needs to be on an immobile kind of surface. So if you do it on paper, you have to make sure that, you know, eventually the paper is kept taut, you know, and you need a more rigid surface for egg tempera. But it can be done on virtually anything that has some rigidity. You do not have to, if you use it on paper, unlike oil, if you use oil on paper, you really need to gesso it, because the oil will saturate the paper and eventually rot it. But with egg tempera, because it also, like oil paint, it oxidizes. It doesn't dry. It oxidizes, which means that it's actually taking on oxygen to dry. Anyway, but it does it very quickly, and so there isn't time for it to ruin the paper. So you can just paint directly with it. And all you have to do is crack an egg as though you're making egg meringue, you know, meringue for a pie or something, and let the egg yolk drip through your fingers, you know, so you're getting rid of the albumen, the white of the egg. And then you're left with the yolk, and then you roll it on a paper towel to remove the last of the albumen. And then it has great integrity. If it's a fresh egg, the membrane's quite strong on it, and you can hold it up and poke it and decant that then into a closable container, and then add about half again as much water, and that's it. That's it. And you can glaze with that, and you can use it as watercolor. You can do all sorts of effects with it, and you can go over and over and over it with transparent layers, so you get almost the effect of oil glazing. It is oil, in fact, with the yolk, but it dries very, very rapidly, and it's, you know, what Andrew Wyeth, it was the process that Andrew Wyeth most recently, I guess he's probably the most famous practitioner of egg tempera in recent times, so it's something that everybody should take a crack at, perhaps.
I guess
take a crack at. Right?
Very interesting what she's talking about, egg tempera.
Yes,
I had a student at the School of the Art Institute. I befriended him. His name was Andrew Young. He got very sick on oil paint. He almost died. And I used to visit him after he got out of the hospital in the studio, and he said, "I don't know what I'm going to do." I said, "There's 1,000 mediums, Andrew. Sure. You got the talent." I went on for a couple of years. All of a sudden, egg tempera. And this guy was so good at egg tempera that in no time, he was shown internationally, New York, California, places in Arizona, New Mexico, Germany. And I just saw him not too long ago, and he said he got tired of the gallerist demanding a certain kind of thing in his egg tempera, but he was a true artist. He wanted to keep going. He said, "So now all I do is I curate shows," but he just had a show at the Arboretum, the Peggy Nordaband.
Nordaberg.
In Chicago, a show of his, egg tempera paintings. And a lot of them are now, the new ones are all floral. The earlier ones were with, like, birds and stuff like that. Because he's really a naturalist. That's another thing, you know. He had an art degree, but he was also, ecology and study of birds like Audubon.
Right.
And he's not showing anywhere anymore, except museums like the Peggy Nordenberg. They asked him to show. And
right. Well, it's a bit of a niche, actually. Yeah. So it would be a good time for people to embark upon it because it's a niche.
And he always told me, I still remember him saying, when they do a book about me, he said, "You know who's going in the forward?" I said, "Who?" He said, "You." But I ain't seen a book yet. So it would be nice to have my name in print on a forward, you know.
Right.
Well, you, your work, you use this very thick cardboard also, which
is... Yeah, it's three-quarter inch corrugated.
Yeah.
It's... I picked that up. That was like, you know, the starving artist thing and... there was a plant in Dalton, Illinois. My brother knew the guy that was the plant manager, and he knew I was an artist, and he told my brother, "Get your brother over here, man." He said, "We're moving to North Carolina or South Carolina." So I went over there, and he showed me all the, you know, the three-quarter inch corrugated. He said, "Here, man, I give it to you." You know, it was real reasonable price, so I got a pickup truck. I loaded the pickup truck up, and I started working on that. And now I've come to the point where I even laminate it with canvas or cloth, and it holds up. I mean, if you treat it right, if you gesso it with an archival, type gesso, it holds up. I mean, and it's lightweight, it's nice, so that's how I started working on that. I also have canvas work and, of course, paper, but I really enjoy the feeling of that cardboard, you know. Like Greg Hertzley, when he came to the studio, he said he was attracted to one painting. It was like, he said, "What did you use? A big brush?" I said, "Yeah, I was loaded with paint." And I just went, "Geesh!" "Yeah, look, it dried real nice," he said. I said, "Yeah, well, you know." But the act of painting, it's a lot like Pollock for me, or automatism, where it's automatic. There's no pre-thought. I mean, that's just the way I like to work now.
They're moody like that, too. You can moody. Almost, yeah, they're very moody every single day. Yeah, there's different mood. Yeah. Or
the mood, whatever. Sometimes I'm
your color palette. Yeah, you'll stick with a color palette for a while, and all of a sudden it abruptly changes.
Me, because I never really say, "Well, I'm going to use this color today." Today I just pink automatically and blue day. Go, and it must convey from inner self my mood for that day. Because I don't know any other way to explain.
Did you say
it.
You have 3,000 of them?
Is that
what you
said? All, but that's all.
Are you documenting them? Yeah. I mean, on the back. I mean, like, so you can catalog them and, yeah.
I started to. I'm too lazy. I just like to do the work. I got piles in my studio, piles and piles and piles.
Sounds like a job for your brother, Giuseppe.
That's a job. I asked him one time to help me when I was doing women's apparel. I said, Can you cut out this this pattern? Well, not me, he said. I can't even cut a straight line. I said, well, here, draw some of these patterns. And I can't draw a straight line and everything. All he wanted to do was sit at the desk, smoke a cigar, and put his feet up, and collect the money.
Yeah.
So an egg tempera question. How does it change the color of the paint? And then over time, what have you noticed? Is it completely stable?
No, there's no. I mean, unlike, like if you're using linseed oil, you know, eventually there is some yellowing,
right.
Eventually. But you don't have that with egg yolk. I mean, it's totally, it's like inert. Mm-hmm. You know, it doesn't, in fact, oil paintings oxidize for years and years and years. And that's why you can't paint acrylic on top of oil, because it's expanding. And you'll crack off the surface of the, you know, you can paint egg yolk or oil paint over acrylic, but you can't do it the other way. And that's why people's house paint often fails, because they've got oil paint underneath the stuff that they put on the top in it. It's totally inert, and, you know, it's a beautiful medium.
And I really enjoy your work, you know.
I feel
not only, you know, the old masters, but if there was an old master surrealism, which there was,
yes,
a few like the Belgian painters, Van Eyck and all them, and then there's the other side of it, which makes me feel symbolism, or
her paintings are loaded with symbolism.
My gosh, yeah. Jan Torup and all that whole group in the turn of the century, you know. Mm-hmm. I was fascinated. A lot of them were Dutch, too.
Yeah.
Yeah, there was a lot of Dutch symbolists that were painting, and I enjoyed that. But it tightens me up to sit there and do a sketch first.
Yeah, there's something for everybody.
That's
all you can say. It's
that's all.
So is this, did you do plein air before, or is this like a recent?
Actually, I hadn't ever done a landscape ever. And I was surprised when one of the reasons I've stayed in the area is because I got involved, you know, right away. I knew that Art Space was coming in, and I thought, oh, there's some potential here. Maybe we'll hang around and see what happens with that. And then I met people from the Duneland Plein Air Painters and got involved with them right away. And it was really a revelation to be out in the landscape painting. I mean, it's a totally
immediate
animal.
And freeing.
Freeing. It's irritating initially because you've got these easels with telescopic legs and they're sinking into the dirt and the wind is blowing and you don't have your coffee there and you can't go to the bathroom when you want and the bugs are sticking to the paint and, you know, it's just, but then once you sort of get over that and get into that head, you know, into the groove of being outside, it's quite wonderful. So this was my first experience, coming here 5 years ago.
I was always curious about your work and the characters in it. Do you use real people from life as basis for some of them? Because, I mean, their expressions are just so natural and lifelike.
Well, you know, Sonny and Nick Orbovich are two cultural leaders here, and Nick is the director of the Classical Music Fest here, and plays with the LaPorte Symphony, and he's an important figure for classical music around here. And I went to the first concert, and it was at the time when I was reading about, you know, Marco Polo, so that I could use him as a character for Mechtild's father. And it was about Marco Polo going to the Yuan Dynasty. And then I started reading about Kublai Khan and everything. And I the Mongols, you know, When I saw Nick Orbovich, I thought, my God, he looks Mongolian. I'm going to use him as a character. So I did depict him as a court musician for Kublai Khan, and then I have my son, and I have a local Cuban fellow as a gypsy fiddler in one of them, and there must be others, which I can't think of right now, but I have depicted five or six people from the local community.
Okay. Robin, we didn't talk about your training background. You were at the University of Chicago and then ended up at the Art Institute?
And
then worked there.
I got accepted back right out of the Navy to the School of the Art Institute. And in those days, everybody told me, forget about it, you'll never get in. It's real rigorous. Well, I got accepted. I enjoyed only 2 years there. I'll tell you, you know, Christina Ramberg was one of my first drawing instructors. And she came up to me one day, I was John then. She says, John, are you familiar with, what's that German painter? I just had it on the tip of my tongue. But well, he does these large women. Oh, Richard Linder. No, I said, no, who's that? She said, he's a famous German painter, you know. Look him up. There was no computer, so I looked him up, and I told her the next day, no, I don't think so. But now, years after, I see Richard Linder coming out of me, literally, when I do some of these figurative abstracts. They're huge women, you know. They almost, some of them almost look circus-like, and that was Richard Linder. But then it got too expensive at the school because they had, private tuition. And all the money I was getting from the Navy, I was giving to the Art Institute. So a buddy of mine who was going to Circle said, hey, come check Circle out. They got a nice art program. So I said, and Illinois State Scholarship will take care of your scholarship. So I went with Roland Ginzel and Dan Ramirez, and I love those two guys. I mean, we knew each other our whole life, you know. So one day we were in a studio class over by across from the Bay's English Muffin Building. They had studios there, and we were all set up. I used to bring a real big canvas already and house painting brushes. And he stopped the class. It's honest to God truth. He said, class, stop. Watch John over there. And I was going, whoosh, whoosh, whoosh. Because they were all going, you know, real tight and stuff. So that's, and then the last thing I did for him, he said, at my graduate thing, I found some old conveyor line belt in a junkyard. It was heavy, treated conveyor line. It was heavy canvas, about this thick. And I was cutting it up with a knife in different shapes, and I was putting the shapes together with different colors, like color field and stuff. Roland said, hey, where'd you get that stuff? I said, you want some? I got him some, and the next week I brought him a whole bunch, and then Roland had a show at Dart Gallery on Superior, that area that burned down.
Mm-hmm.
And I went to see his show. He was a color field guy, and he had all these, this conveyor line belt, laundry just glued.
Larry, you said we were going to need a second show for these two.
We will.
I think we're going to have to do part two.
Part two, okay.
Well, this has been a real joy here. Kai can stop and off. I'll get it right one of these times, Kai. And Robin Lenthing, who, for the secret identity is John. You've been listening to Art in the Air, WVLP 103.1 FM. We'd like to thank you guys today. I mean, we could do a whole part two on this one.
Definitely.
Definitely. Remember, Art in the Air is heard every Friday at 11 a.m. and rebroadcast Monday at 5 p.m. Your hosts are Larry Breckner and Esther Golden. Thanks again to Greg Kovach, WVLP station manager and engineer on our show today. Our supporters are Valpo University, Brower Museum, and Walt Brenninger, the landlord of our space.
And hopefully you, please.
Yes, and if you'd like to be that, go to wvlp.org/support, and you can support us and become an underwriter. Thank you for listening to Art on the Air.
Thank you.